Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Merry Christmas to you all. It is indeed Christmas. What a bloody beautiful time of the year it is. Summer, gorgeous, hot, sunny day, down by the river. Gotta love the Southern Hemisphere. We went down to Warburton, to the Yarra River, and had a little family picnic. It was very relaxing. And the magic bird's nest for my niece was a smash hit. She loved it. So I did a bloody good job of buying presents this year. Anna loves her son more than her daughter. Ugh. Oh, excuse me, I'm already yawning. Ah, it's been a big day. That was the discussion prompt for part 5, chapter 31. Anna seems to love her son more than her daughter. Not good. I am a Norwegian said, Merry Christmas, everyone. Tolstoy points out a self-fulfilling prophecy set up by Anna, probably not on purpose. She doesn't include Vronsky in the things that are bothering her, so she ends up sitting alone with her suffering and thoughts, unable to ask for advice or help, or just get some of it out. And this unintended consequence of her policy of non-communication also makes her look at Vronsky negatively. He's in damned if you do, damned if you don't territory. Though if Anna is right about how he will react to her problems, then there's not much to be done, I guess. That description of the baby was super cute, makes it all the more depressing how Anna feels towards her daughter. She's a child that's going to be raised by nannies and wet nurses, doormen and servants. Jan Brunt said, it is heartbreaking because Anna and Vronsky are actually relatively well matched and could probably have had a fulfilling marriage under other circumstances. Indeed. That's all the discussion we had today. I guess everyone's a bit busy doing Christmas things. I'm a bit busy doing Christmas things, and I gotta go to bed because I gotta go up and see my dad tomorrow, and that's a 2-hour drive. So let's do chapter 32, and we can all get back to eating Christmas puddings and drinking eggnog or whatever else Christmas things are. Chapter 32. When Vronsky returned, Anna had not yet come home. He was told that soon after he left, a lady came to see her, and they went away together. Her departure, without mentioning where she was going, her prolonged absence, and the fact that she had been away somewhere in the morning without telling him about it, added to her strangely excited look that morning, and the animosity with which, in Yashvin's presence, she had almost snatched her son's photographs out of his hands, made Vronsky reflect. He decided that it was necessary to have an explanation with her, and he waited for her in the drawing room. But Anna did not return alone. She brought with her her old maiden aunt, Princess Oblonskaya. She it was who had been to see Anna that morning, and they had been shopping together. Anna seemed not to notice the worried look of inquiry on Vronsky's face, but chatted gaily about what she had been buying. He saw that something unusual was taking place within her. Her eyes glittered with an expression of strained attention when her look rested on him, and in her speech and motions there was that nervous quickness and grace which, during the first period of their intimacy, had so captivated him. But which now troubled and alarmed him. The table was laid out for four. They were all assembled and about to enter the little dining room when Tushkevich arrived with a message for Anna from the Princess Betsy. The princess asked to be excused for not coming to say goodbye. She was not well, but asked Anna to come and see her between 6:30 and 9. Vronsky glanced at Anna when that definite time was mentioned, which showed that care had been taken to prevent her meeting anyone there, but Anna did not seem to observe it. I'm sorry that between 6:30 and 9 is just the time when I cannot come, she replied with a faint smile. The princess will be very sorry, and I too. I expect you are going to hear Patty, asked Tushkev. Patty, that's an idea. I would go if I could get a box. I could get you one, said Tushkevich. I should be very, very grateful if you would, replied Anna, but won't you stay and dine with us? Vronsky slightly shrugged his shoulders. He could not in the least understand what Anna was after. Why had she brought the old princess? Why had she asked Tushkevich to stay to dinner? And strangest of all, why was she sending him to get her a box for the opera? Was it conceivable that, in her position, she was going to the opera when Patty was to sing, and when all the subscribers, her society acquaintances, would be present? He looked seriously at her, but she answered him with the same provocative glance of high spirits and desperation, the meaning of which he could not make out. At dinner, Anna was aggressively merry, seeming to flirt with both Tushkevich and Yashvin. After dinner, Tushkevich went to get a box and Yashvin to have a smoke. Vronsky went with Yashvin down to his own rooms, but after sitting with him a while, ran upstairs again. Anna was already dressed in a light silk dress, cut low in front and trimmed with velvet, a dress she had had made in Paris, and on her head she wore some rich white lace, which outlined her face and set off her brilliant beauty to great advantage. "You are really going to the theatre?" said he, trying not to look at her. "Why do you ask in such a frightened way?" she said, again offended because he did not look at her. "Why should I not go?" She appeared not to grasp the meaning of her words. "Of course, there is no reason whatever," he replied, with a frown. "That's just what I say," she answered, purposely ignoring the sarcasm of his tone and calmly pulling up her long, perfumed glove. "Anna, for heaven's sake, what has come to you?" he said, trying to recall her to her senses, as her husband once used to do. "I don't understand your question." "You know it is out of the question for you to go." "Why, I'm not going alone. The Princess Barbara has gone to dress, and is coming with me." He shrugged his shoulders with a bewildered and despairing look. "But don't you know," he began. "I don't want to know," she almost screamed. "I don't. Do I repent of what I have done? No, no, no. If I had to begin again from the beginning, I should do just the same. For us, for you and me, only one thing is important, whether we love each other. No other considerations exist. Why do we live here, separated and not seeing one another? Why can't I go? I love you, and it's all the same to me," she said, changing from French to Russian, while her eyes, as she looked at him, glittered with a light he could not understand. "So long as you have not changed toward me, why don't you look at me?" He looked at her. He saw all the beauty of her face and of her dress, which suited her, as her dresses always did. But now it was just this beauty and elegance that irritated him. "My feelings cannot change, you know that, but I beg you not to go. I entreat you," he said, again speaking French, with tender entreaty in his voice, but with a cold look in his eyes. She did not hear his words, but saw the coldness of his look and replied irritably, "And I beg you will explain why I should not go." "Because it might cause you..." He became confused. "I don't understand you at all. Yashvin n'est pas comprenant, and Princess Barbara is no worse than other people. Ah, here she is." The footnote says that bit in French said, "Yashvin's society is not compromising." And that's the end of the chapter. Another chapter, Dunsky. It's a Christmas bloody miracle. Thank you very much for spending your Christmas listening to my stupid voice. Good to have you. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.